nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, where it's currently 48 degrees, rainy. We're looking for a high near 53 today. Northeast wind to 10 miles per hour will continue overnight, as will the rain. We're looking for an overnight low of 47. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak Senator Gary Stevens weighs in on the state budget and the special sessions. Kodiak food trucks continue to pop up. The city has something to say about it. And Rafael Batanga is starting a film camp. That plus an update on the Calson Creek fire after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Barbara Klein. In Cornwall, England, President Biden delivered his first speech on the world stage today on the eve of the G7 summit. Biden used the occasion to formally announce the U.S. will donate 500 million doses of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine to the world's lowest income countries.
Our values call on us to do everything that we can to vaccinate the world against COVID-19.
But as NPR's Frank Langfitt reports from Cornwall, the donation is not only about American values.
It's also a geopolitical aspect to this here. It's not purely humanitarian. He knows that Russia and China, they are distributing vaccines. They are winning over some hearts and minds here and there by doing so. And I think Biden recognizes, and I think Johnson probably recognizes as well, that these Western democracies need to step up for the rest of the world as well.
Biden also said as long as the virus rages elsewhere, the risk of new mutations threatens Americans, and it raises the instability and weakens other countries. Two of President Biden's top cybersecurity nominees are calling for an all-hands-on-deck response to the recent ransomware attacks and other computer breaches. As NPR's Greg Myrie reports, the nominees say that involves more cooperation between the government and private companies.
Chris Inglis is Biden's choice for the newly created post of National Cyber Director in the White House. He told a Senate committee cyber attacks won't be eliminated, but can be greatly reduced.
Get it down to a reasonable kind of fire such that we can then manage that. It will never go away completely, but we can bring it down. We can bring it to heel significantly.
Jen Easterly, the president's pick to lead the cybersecurity agency at Homeland Security, told the committee most breaches could be prevented with simple fixes, like better password security and patching software flaws. Both nominees are expected to win confirmation. Greg Myrie, NPR News, Washington.
China is welcoming the Biden administration's move to reverse Trump administration orders aimed at banning Chinese apps, including TikTok and WeChat. Beijing calls it a positive step. The White House says it's ordered an evidence-based review to identify security risks of software applications tied to China. Inflation is rising. The Labor Department reports the Consumer Price Index in May surged 5% over a year ago. It's the highest it's been since 2008. Economists blame pandemic supply chain interruptions and higher demand as consumers emerge from restrictions. The Biden administration says it's temporary. This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
A state budget will likely be passed at the end of this month's special legislative session, but the PFD question may not be answered by then. That's according to Kodiak Senator Gary Stevens, who sat down with Jared Griffin at KMXT to talk about recent developments in the legislature and what they mean for Kodiak.
In May, Governor Dunleavy called two special sessions for the Alaska legislature to complete work on some pretty major items. The main goals of the June special session are to pass a state budget and address the PFD. A budget must be passed before June 30th, and this is not the first time that the state has come down to the wire on that. But Senator Gary Stevens from Kodiak is not concerned.
Government will not be shut down, I can promise you that. Pink slips will not be sent out, I can promise you that.
But what can happen is that a budget will be passed with everything in it except for the PFD. In that case, Stevens said the PFD will be taken up at the next special session in August. The PFD has grown exponentially this past year, from $60 billion to just over $80 billion. Senator Stevens expressed optimism about the potential of the PFD to fund nearly all state government services in the near future.
When it reaches $100 billion, 5% is $5 billion, and $5 billion pays for everything. It pays for all public services, schools, police protection, mental health, all of those things. Pretty remarkable that it pays for that, plus it would pay for a reasonable dividend, maybe around $1,000.
Stevens believes that by reducing overdraws from the fund now would help the state avoid taxing Alaskans to pay for government services.
You know, we can overdraw the permanent fund by another 5%, as the governor has suggested. We could do that. But that means that the investment is going down every year, the money you get every year.
For those reasons, Senator Stevens opposes Governor Dunleavy's proposal to enshrine the PFD formula in the state constitution.
If we put those things in the constitution, we can't touch them. What happens if things really go to hell in a handbasket? Mm-hmm. What happens at that point? How does the state then pay for services? The only way we can do that then is to do income tax or sales tax.
The state of Alaska is also receiving about $1 trillion in federal COVID relief to use over the next 3 years. Some of that money will be trickling down to Kodiak.
The plan that came out of the House that the Senate certainly agrees to is to forward fund the marine highway system by 6 months, so that instead of doing a one-year budget, it's a one-and-a-half-year budget, which really allows the marine highway system to make plans.
Some of those funds will also be used on the construction of a new Tustamina ferry vessel, which is certainly good news for Kodiak residents. Stevens also said that Kodiak can count on at least 50% reimbursement from the state for school bond debt, which has been a significant concern to the Kodiak Borough Assembly as they work through their budget process this month. Kodiak and the state often has difficulty recruiting and retaining teachers, and one of the largest gaps is in special education. Stevens authored a bill that increases funding for special education teacher training and support through the Special Education Service Agency. He hopes that the governor can come to Kodiak to sign it.
I haven't come here and signed it, and I talked to Larry Ledoux, and he's willing to make arrangements. We'll see if that works out. The governor may not fit his schedule. It may have to be done in Anchorage.
Stevens is also working on a bill to encourage new technology in Alaska fisheries, specifically for Kodiak pollock and cod.
So we did this years ago. I was involved in a committee that formulated a tax credit for processors in salmon, and we were able to help processors go into new products, go into frozen fillets, mm-hmm. and really helped them buy the equipment they needed so they could do that. This bill is very similar in that it would do the same thing, tax credits for new equipment in terms of pollock and cod.
Stevens believes this bill will increase the value of pollock and cod. He hopes the bill will pass next year. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jared Griffin.
The legislative special session will wrap up before June 18th. The second special session, beginning August 2nd, is tasked with exploring state revenues, appropriating federal pandemic relief funds, and debating constitutional amendments on spending and taxes. Rafael Batanga's journey has taken him far from Kodiak, but it can't keep him from Kodiak. The Cornell University student and multimediaist extraordinaire is coming back to put his talents to work for other aspiring college graduates for free. He's currently pitching a summer program designed to help students reach scholarships by way of video storytelling.
I'll be coming back to Kodiak this summer, and I'll be teaching a film workshop for students ages 16 to 21 with the hopes that the video that they'll be creating, which is a two-minute video, could be used to enter to scholarships as well as college applications. But specifically, this workshop is focusing towards the scholarship called LIVMA Scholarship, which I've applied to that scholarship twice now, and I have gotten $10,000 both times. It's a fairly easy scholarship because it only is focused on passion, solely passion, not on academics, not even community service or any of those type of things.
His program works in two parts, a mentorship program in which he and other Kodiak High School alumni help students with the application process, then regular meetings to help students produce their own short videos for use in scholarship applications.
This is a way for me to connect students with students that are already experiencing the college experience. This will allow students in the class to gain an understanding of what it's like to be a college student, what it's like to apply to colleges. And for some, they may even receive somebody who's going to graduate school already or who has already graduated. This will then, you know, I hope, create a network for these students to build beyond the island and somebody that could be a point of contact for them.
Of course, making a serious movie demands serious equipment, and Batanga provides.
At the moment, I've been very fortunate with the scholarships that I've received from the past to have been able to buy several computers that we'll be able to utilize. So, you know, I have a limited amount of equipment that I'll be allowing the students to use, you know, professional equipment. I want students to really experience what it's like to put together a film that they're going to be proud of.
The program is slated to begin June 21st and runs through July 30th, meeting Mondays and Wednesdays from 1 to 3 p.m. There are 20 slots for the program, all of which are free. A meeting location has yet to be determined, but Batanga is searching in interest. Those interested can reach him at rbatanga01@gmail.com. That's, get your pencil, rbitanga01. @gmail.com. As food trucks continue to pop up around Kodiak, with 10 active trucks operating now, plus a brand new pizza truck opening just this week, the city is taking steps to regulate the growing industry. KMXT's Jared Griffin has this report.
In this week's city work session, the city council discussed ways to standardize how food trucks operate in city limits and, most notably, on city property. First, food trucks will soon need to be licensed with the city if they want to operate on city property. In addition to meeting fire and other safety regulations, the city will ask food trucks to pay $500 to apply for the permit. Food trucks operating on private property inside the city limits will not be required to have a permit. But those food trucks who are looking to set up shop on the spit or public parking lot will face some restrictions. For instance, only 10 permits will be available at first, according to city manager Mike Twenge.
I don't want to see food carts all over, food vendors all over town. So in town, I would say 6 sites, you know, max. And, you know, we got the library. When I'm talking about in town, I mean 6 street sites or so. 5-6 street sites. You know, we've got Pier 2 in there. We have the library that would expand on that. So I'm looking at 10 sites right now, which is probably the limit.
The proposed locations are the old library location on Lower Mill Bay Road, which could accommodate 4 food trucks, 3 spots for trucks on the spit, and 1 spot each at the large parking lot at the Y, the smaller parking lot across from the ferry terminal on Marine Way, and Fisherman's Wharf. One other concern that the city addressed is ensuring the mobility of food trucks.
No food service vehicle shall remain in substantially the same location for more than 12 hours in any 24-hour period. That means they pack up and go home at night and come back tomorrow.
There are several reasons for this, as City Fire Chief Jim Mulliken explains.
So the ability for one for the fire inspection, we have to bring it to the fire station to be inspected. That's how I can guarantee they're mobile. And the second piece of this is through legislation to say that they have to move these things every 12 hours. Now we're guaranteeing they're staying in their category of being a mobile food vendor.
The city is hoping that the dedicated spots for food trucks will encourage commerce and foot traffic in the city without competing too greatly with the brick-and-mortar restaurants, and that food trucks could bring a different energy to the town, as Mayor Pat Branson looks forward to.
We could have food trucks and then have entertainment in Sargent Park, which I have advocated for quite some time. It's a perfect venue for that.
The plans are still in draft form. The City Council will take up a formal ordinance for public input during their July meetings. For KMXT News in Kodiak, I'm Jared Griffin.
The Kelsen Creek fire has been placed in monitor status, meaning that ground teams will be removed from the fire line. It is expected that the fire will be smothered by the present rain. The fire burned a total of 76 acres in between Olds River and Kelsen Creek and has been burning since Saturday evening. It's presently 100% contained. At its peak, it received attention from multiple local fire crews and several firefighting aircraft. The Wildland Fire Crew from Kenai will depart from Kodiak tomorrow. Firefighters corralled another lightning-caused wildfire in the interior yesterday. State Forestry spokesperson Tim Mowry says the Salcha River fire, located about a mile north of the Salcha River near Flat Creek, 25 miles east of the Richardson Highway. Mowry says there are cabins in the general area, and the fire was hit hard from the air.
Multiple drafts by two water scoopers. Air tanker dropped two loads of retardant on each flank of the fire to box it in and protect the cabins along the river to slow its progress there.
Mowry says the air attack was effective and the fire, which was estimated at 3 acres at the start of the operation, was halted at 7 acres. He says smoke jumpers and fire crews are working the burn to secure the perimeter. The fire is suspected to have resulted from a lightning strike that smoldered into flames. A bill in the U.S. Senate addresses PFAS contamination at military sites nationwide, including two in Alaska. The Filthy 50 Act, introduced by Kirsten Gillibrand of New York and fellow Democratic Senator Alex Padilla of California, would require the Secretary of Defense to submit a report to Congress within 60 days on the status of PFAS remediation at the 50 most contaminated Department of Defense sites.
And make sure that those are prioritized. So it might be a short bill, but it's a very important bill.
Jared Hayes, policy analyst at the nonprofit Environmental Working Group, says Eielson Air Force Base and former Galena Air Force Station are among the Filthy 50.
Because they have such high levels of contamination, they were specifically selected for priority cleanup.
More broadly, the bill would require the Secretary of Defense to conduct PFAS testing at all DOD sites within 2 years of the law taking effect. Sites where water is found to be in violation of state or federal PFAS drinking contamination standards would have to be provided safe water within 60 days. Finally, the legislation would require remediation of PFAS at contaminated DOD sites within 10 years.
That's important because in a recent congressional hearing, DOD officials testified that they're looking at a conservative 30 years for remediation at these sites, so that would bring that down pretty swiftly.
A companion piece of legislation introduced by Gillibrand and Padilla called the Clean Water for Military Families Act would authorize $10 billion for PFAS investigation and remediation at military sites. Geologists are using clues in Cooper Landing's lakes to learn more about earthquakes in the area. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has this story.
Kenai Lake is pretty placid, but right after the 1964 Good Friday earthquake, the lake was hit with a tsunami that washed out the bridge there and left behind blocky layers of sediment. Those layers are useful today to scientists who are looking to learn more about past and future earthquakes, like Peter Heusler. He's a research geologist for the U.S. Geological Survey based in Alaska. He spoke to a crowd in Cooper Landing this week about his research on earthquakes in the area.
It actually was studies of the 1964 earthquake that kind of gave birth to modern earthquake detectives.
Earthquake detectives want to learn more about when large earthquakes occurred, in part to brace for the future. Engineers need to know more about how the ground shakes so they can build infrastructure that's up to the task. One way to get that information is through paleoseismology.
Paleo means ancient and seismology means earthquake. So it's understanding the frequency of old earthquakes through studying lakes.
Sediment on the sides of lakes, like Kenai Lake, gets shaken up during big earthquakes. It then floats to the bottom and settles in layers. Geologists can dig out cores from the bottom of those lakes to glean snapshots of the events that occurred nearby in the last 90 years or so. They do that by sticking what's essentially a long tube into the ground to get a cross-section of rocky layers. They can also use what's called a chirp, which releases sound waves to reflect the different layers below the bottoms of lakes.
One thing that we really like about them is that they have annual laminations. And so, and these are often called varves, and these are a lot like tree rings. You have almost a yearly record of sedimentation into a lake based on these things. So they're really quite a wonderful way to go.
Drake Singleton is a Mendenhall Fellow with the U.S. Geological Survey. Singleton says that information is really helpful. While geologists can't predict exactly when earthquakes will occur, they can use the information to develop hazard maps for engineering purposes.
As scary as it is to go through an earthquake of this magnitude and the strongest shaking, it's actually, these events are really good tools for us to understand the response to geology.
The research isn't without its logistical challenges, Heusler says.
So last year we were coring over in this part of the lake, and we actually got a fish inside our core.
The Geological Survey is going to take cores from Kenai and Skelak Lakes to a lab to learn more about the 2018 South Central earthquake. Heusler says a lot of those cores are stored in the old Sam's Club building in Anchorage. That core library includes a cutting from the first Prudhoe Bay discovery well, he says. For KDLL, I'm Sabine Pooks.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Track daily salmon catches, plus fish prices and sales back to 1989. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
As salmon fisheries open across Alaska, it's easy to track all catches in all regions. One click will take you to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Blue Sheet at its commercial fisheries webpage. You'll also find weekly summaries of all salmon harvests with comparisons to past years. Another webpage shows previous year fish prices and landings for every Alaska species by region, plus how much was made into products such as frozen, fresh, canned, or roe, and what processors bought and sold it for. That comes from the Commercial Operators Annual Reports, or CORE, from Alaska processors, who are required to provide purchasing and sales reports each year. The newest CORE data for 2020 is under Statistics and Data and goes all the way back to 1989. It shows, for example, that last year's average pink salmon price of 33 cents a pound was the lowest in 5 years. Sockeyes averaged $1.06 a pound, down from $1.61. For other Alaska catches, red king crab was the priciest product, averaging $11.88 to fishermen. The Dungeness crab price at $1.77 was a drop from $2.88 a pound. Halibut prices at $4.23 also were down by more than a dollar last year. Yellow eye at $1.09 was the most valuable of the 25 rockfish species listed. Gray cod at 44 cents was up a penny. Lump suckers and majestic squid fetched a penny a pound at the docks, and some delivered fish like Pacific sleeper sharks and jellyfish had zero value. Find links to buying and prices, daily salmon catches, and more at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 2, date issued 10 a.m. on June 9th. There will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Thursday, June 10th until 9 p.m. Saturday, June 12th, in the following areas: in the Cape Alitak, Humpy Dead Man, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. As previously announced, there will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period in the Northwest Kodiak District from noon Wednesday, June 9th until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 10th. Following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the Inner Katoy Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, Duck Bay, and Iziwit Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Closed waters will be reduced in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. In Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822. And to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. And in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy Bay and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, beginning at noon Tuesday, June 8th, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse-seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. The closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Today is Thursday. It is the 10th day of June, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 5:09. It will set again at 11:09. That's going to give us 18 hours of daylight, a gain of 1 minute and 33 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 3:36 this afternoon. That will be a 6.6-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 8:36 this evening of 2.8 feet. Our next high tide will be at 2:42 a.m., of 9.2 feet, and our morning low tide will be at 9:36 a.m. and be minus 0.9 feet on the east side. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 3:48 this afternoon. That will be a 12.7 foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:27 this evening of 3 feet. Your next high tide will be at 3:13 a.m. of 14 feet, and your low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will occur at 9:59, almost 10 a.m., and be minus 1.5 feet. 48 degrees here in Kodiak. The temperature has been remarkably steady all day. We're looking for this rain to continue probably until 8 p.m. tonight or so. Cloudy skies tonight with a low around 47. Northeast winds are going to continue at 10 miles per hour today and tonight. For tomorrow, a 20% chance of rain before 11 a.m., then partly sunny skies after that with a high near 59. North wind about 5 miles per hour tomorrow, becoming completely calm tomorrow afternoon. Partly cloudy skies overnight on Friday with another low of 47. And then mostly sunny skies on Saturday with a high near 59 and west wind to 10 miles per hour. Pretty much perfect. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory today with northeast wind to 20 knots and seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, look for northeast wind to 15 knots in the morning, becoming variable 10, seas coming down to 6 feet. Over in the Shelikof, northeast wind to 20 knots right now and seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, southwest 15, seas to 3 feet. In Chiniak Bay, we're looking at northeast wind to 15 knots right now, seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, look for variable less than 10, seas to 2 feet. And up in Marmot Bay, northeast 15 right now, seas to 4 feet. Tomorrow, variable less than 10, becoming southwest 10 tomorrow afternoon, seas to 2 feet in Marmot Bay tomorrow afternoon. Kodiak Island Borough is having a work session tonight. Their assembly is. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Bayside Volunteer Fire Department. It's open to the public. And the Kodiak City Council will be holding a regular meeting tonight at 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Library Multipurpose Room. It's open to the public. It will be broadcast here on KMXT and web-streamed from the city's website.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.